Blog Talk Radio.
Bed of coals, the poet is born. Our story is riddled with challenges and changes, like blows from a blacksmith's hammer, bent and chiseled into shape. If only forging a poet were that easy. Emotional development, relationship, experiences, environment, genetics, all take hand in molding the immature adult we are today. That was a joke. Come on. We're on the air.
So welcome to the Double Helix, where we examine the X's and Y's on a show celebrating the human experience, where your true colors are what ties the room together. So get comfortable, because what you're about to hear is poetry that we are made of.
I'm the Duke of St. Paul, Dexter Bailey.
And I'm Aphasiana. We will be featuring poems from our contest on the website allpoetry.com. We are part of a group on the website called Late Night Poets. If you are in the group, you can follow along the chat to read the poems as we do for the full experience. However, you do not need to be in the group to contribute poems, call in, or listen.
Thank you, Fill My Eyes from Late Night Poets, and thank you, Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, Dexter, for hosting with me, and to everyone who contributed poems or called in. Your writing is what we are here for.
Good evening, good evening. Hopefully all is well out there in poetry land and in the late night poets. We have another fantastic night lined up here with some great poetry, as usual, for the Double Helix. We're very grateful and appreciative of that fact because we have a bunch of fine poets that always continue to support the show and submit work. Phasiana, how are you this evening?
Well,
I'm good now that I'm here. You know, it's always nice to talk to you and to read poems and hear from all of the amazing poets that contribute. So I'm excited for that. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Yeah, I'm glad that you made it. You came skidding in like a cartoon character, from what it sounds like.
I did.
Being barely making it in. And I'm glad that you did, because like I said, we got a great night lined up. You know, I just got the last poetry contest that I had submitted and all judged and everything. You know, doing these contests is kind of a little bit almost like writing poetry itself. You know, I kind of take it seriously and things like that. And so sometimes it's a little bit of a delay because I don't want to half-hearted do something, you know. So sometimes it's like, you know, when the time is right, you got to submit it or, you know, you got to, you know, judge it and make a new contest. So this whole entire experience is a little bit like writing itself. Would you agree?
I would. Sometimes coming up with the contest is just as hard as coming up with my own poem.
I know. That's what I'm saying. And it's like I don't want to do some half-hearted contest. So I apologize about the delay. And we have kind of an interesting topic this week. And Warren Zevon, I kind of used that as an example. The contest wasn't based upon Warren Zevon and his Renegade song, because there's some fundamental differences he talks about that I 1,000% disagree with. But I thought that he kind of captured the essence of what we're looking for. You know what I mean? It has the spirit of a rebel, and so I just used that as an example. I think that song's actually been kind of questionable. Some believe that it's kept him out of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But there's nothing wrong with not without examining things and discussing it. So a lot of good writes from it, the Renegade contest, and also we're going to split a little bit with the contest possibly that you have going too if we get to it as well. This week's contest, as I said before, is Renegade and Rebel. You know, what makes you a renegade? What makes you a rebel? And you could write about it. So with that being said, why don't you take us to our first write?
All right. Well, I'm going to start with the one by Babbler, and I'm going to read that. I really enjoyed this one, so I'm claiming the read on it.
Fantastic. Awesome.
Sheep. This is Sheep by Babbler. My brother rides a motorcycle with black leather seats and blinding chrome. He throws back whiskey and snorts off the back of toilets. Tattoos stain his arms black. If you ask, he'll tell you a tale for each, some taller than others. Everyone says he's a chip off the old block, just like our father, wild and crazy, lovable but dangerous. He's just what you'd expect from run-down cul-de-sac of tin cans. My sisters sport Iron Maiden tank tops and teach me how to make a bong out of just about anything. Their sun warm skin, freckled from playing hooky, shines like those summers from 1980s that everyone thinks they remember. No one is sure where I came from. Stubbornly straight-laced, refusing to partake in the party, pulling grades like I only know the first two letters of the alphabet, rolling spliffs just to pass them down, unlit. 200 years of tradition ended with a piece of paper handed to me on a warm day in June, a white sheep in a sea of black, wearing a tassel on the left. End poem.
Awesome read and awesome write, Babbler. You know, I've gotten to know Babbler over the course of time. I've gotten to hear a little bit about her story, a little bit about her background and what she comes from. And this, once again, is revealing a slice of that. And and being the renegade that's not quite exactly like her family. You know, it's something that, you know, is not fleeting, is not possible maybe to be fleeting of it completely unscathed, because when you come from a little bit of a tough background, there's going to be bits and pieces of that that just naturally cling on to you. And you know, he throws back whiskey and snorts off the back of toilets. Substance abuse and mental illness and all of these things have a way of kind of swirling around into this little tornado tough, bad influence. But 200 years of tradition ended with a piece of paper, and I'm taking that as being the first generation college graduate is the way that I'm interpreting this, and the first person to ever walk and get her tassel. So congratulations, Babbler, and fantastic write. Faziana, what did you think?
I love it. I always love hearing Babbler's stories of her family, and even though she had such a hard childhood, she came out of it so strong, and the way that she describes things is very vivid and raw. She has this honesty that is so visceral, and I love the way that she paints the picture. I like that her brother has a story for each of the tattoos on his arm, and that he has both the bad and the good of her father. I like the way that she describes the trailer park, the rundown cul-de-sac of tin cans. I like that she is the opposite of what you would think a rebel is, and in her family, that is the rebel. That by being the one who follows the rules and does well in school, that's her rebellion. And I can relate to that. You know, my family was very blue collar, and they kind of thought university was dumb, a waste of money. Why wouldn't you just work? And I didn't have the extreme that Babbler faced, but I definitely had that kind of sense of, like, I was the odd one out because I was the academic, and that was just madness. Why would I do that? So I feel that, like, she had an even stronger opposite in doing that. So I can imagine what it was like, their response to how responsible she was. I really loved the way that she said, pulling grades like I only know the first two letters of the alphabet. That took me a second because I'm like, you only know the first two. And then I was like, A's and B's, those were her marks. So I don't know what it took. I was like, don't you want to know more of the alphabet if you're smart? And then I was like, oh, yeah, okay, I see how it is. I like the way that she put that. And yeah, like you said, graduating, being the first one to graduate, I like that she puts it as, like, breaking tradition. She's the renegade breaking the tradition of the family by graduating. And I think, I could be totally wrong about this, that way back in the day, graduation papers were done on sheepskin because it was like the really high quality, like, scroll kind of stuff. I could be totally making this up. I don't know. For some reason, I think of sheepskin as being something that was, like, a thing that was, like, for really fancy things, like vellum, or I can't remember what it's called, something like that. So to have the sheepskin be the thing that goes with the whole black sheep metaphor, except she's the white sheep in the herd of black, I just think that was such a fun reversal. And to say it subtly it's a piece of paper, and she has a tassel, but we know that she's talking about graduation. I just think Babbler's wonderful. She's my co-host on my other show, so I'm a little bit biased, but I love Babbler.
Well, great catch, and I, you know, luckily now that we have this Google thing right in our hands, so you were right. I had never heard of that before, but Sheepskin was the printing of the diploma. So good catch, and good catch on the A and B. Couple of facts, fact checks that I didn't know. Phil, are you on this evening?
I don't see her in the studio.
Okay. Wasn't sure if she was on this evening for a comment. But anyway, great piece, Babbler. Thank you for submitting that, and great comment of Faziana. Where are we heading to next?
Well, I want to shout out to Rim Gahal, who is new to the group and I think listening for the first time. So welcome. And
awesome.
Now we have a poem by Peter Solway. If you'll read that for us, please, Dexter.
Absolutely. Naked to bed. Clutch pillow of transitional object. Imagine the sunset of civilization. Sweet cushion of illusion. Imagine there's no heaven, full of naked girlfriends, chanting bigger than John Lennon. Better than Al Capone. Peter the mosquito with machine gun. Rat-a-tat-tat, squirt, museum, now empty, black hole revolutionary, sheet stinky, to reveal the deal, revolution imaginary, mosquitoes too, trying to sleep. Private berth on the Indian Pacific were Perth, Sirius West, black swans of trespass, taunt the clacking truth, imagining the ride. Freedom within, smell of other humans, all coughing, farting, winding their route through the swift catacombs, girls of promise, cannons of tunnels, joining the resistance, Olga with papers, the war already won, breakfast with warm muffin, station of golden morning, blue the sky, red the ground, recalling all recorded loves, pulling into Western town, gins on offer, gold under, faith in next stanza, start coughing again, life like a train west, never that long to last, straight to Perth General, COVID with mask, tubes up my arse. Never my mission to make sense. Be well traveled, famous as a static, rebel to rebel, cough constantly at Perth Hospital, tell nurses of asbestos, fine as Percules, dingo testicles. Outback stories, big snake to hiss, on stones with sticks, go clickety-clack, clickety-clack. Rubble with credit card of Calgary. God with excuses and last stretch. Art always a cross-country task. Ask my mom. A Stalinist giving birth to me, telling the surgeon, cut cord and throat. Toughen that lame up, getting plane back east, where the sun rises first, over grave of both parents, lying like idiots, question of freight, cheaper by rail, simpler by letter, clickety-clack, forever together, bones of peace, Bethane gas, announcement on intercom, plague of useless verse in carriage one, and poem. Peter Solway, once again,
delivering. You know what I thought would be interesting? Peter would have to, I mean, and it's not out of the question, but he would have to have a hell of a sense of humor when he said, never my mission to make sense. If we're sitting here breaking down his poems for all this time and none of them are ever were supposed to make sense, but he would have a hell of a sense of humor. But, you know, as off the wall as he can be, there's usually decipherable message within it. And I think that this one comes as, you know, that rebel as far as talking about John Lennon being naked to bed, you know, when he laid naked with Yoko is a protest. A poet is kind of in that same category, I guess, of protest as it's not with a machine gun. It's not a physical renegade. You're not a physical rebel. You're not killing people. Revolution imaginary. And so you're creating a revolution and you're being a rebel and all of it though with your mind, being a renegade in your own mind and being able to create that with a pen. And Peter does that here very, very abstract and imaginative. So very well done, Peter. Faziano, what did you think about this write?
Well, I had to laugh at that same line of never my goal to make sense because I'm always struggling to make sense of what he says. And I do think he actually does make sense, but he's so intelligent that he really, like, layers things and puts it all together and just has so many references that I don't always feel smart enough, to be honest with you, to catch everything that he's saying. But I have to laugh at that part because I think he knows that he can be a mystery sometimes in his writing. So it's poking fun at himself and at us for trying to decipher everything. But also because I don't think he feels the need to explain himself. Like, he knows his poem has a meaning. And he might chuckle at us for misunderstanding it. I'm sure he gets a laugh out of me sometimes, or a rolled eyes. But I think that he doesn't feel like he needs to be like, no, actually, I meant this. Because it's not his goal for us to totally, you know, get what he's saying necessarily. He just wants to get it out there. And he's saying his message, and he's saying it in a beautiful artistic way. And, you know, it doesn't really matter to him, I think, if we analyze him properly. I could be wrong about that, but I think that he's kind of poking at us with that line. I really liked the Peter the Mosquito because for I'm thinking that there's probably an accent there where it's like Peta the Mosquito. The way that Peter is said could make that have an internal rhyme that I can picture working well. And I like the onomatopoeia of the rat-a-tat-tat squirt. I also like that the sheet sticky works on multiple levels. So he's talking about, you know, squirting art at the museum, but he's also talking about other things. So I like that it has the double entendre there. Where's the other part? The clickety clack, the repetition of the clickety clack, I really enjoyed. Just that sense of being on the train and art always as a cross country task. Ask my mom. I like that that transition there between like the cross country thing and then it's like, yeah, ask my mom because he was probably a handful for her always off on his artistic adventures, I can imagine. I always find his work really interesting and I definitely have to go back and take a better look because he always has so many references woven into them.
Yeah, I really liked your comment, and I think that there was a lot of truth to what you said. You know, and yeah, it's always so there's always so much humor mixed in. I was just reading again the mosquitoes too, trying to sleep. You know, what a great thought, you know, of the mosquito sleep. You know, everybody's pissed off about the mosquito always biting them, but the mosquitoes too trying to sleep. It's always some witty lines and incredible perspective woven in. And yeah, you're right. It doesn't care about it. Other people's interpretation of it, because the art of it is that it can be interpreted in a lot of different ways. So I really enjoyed it, and very well done. What do we got next here, Aphasia?
This is called Runs with Scissors, and it's by Blue Leader One. When I was 7, my mom tried to walk me to school. I started running ahead. Eventually, she would lose sight of me. She tried to hold my hand and stop me, but I would always break free. I would run and run, and I've been running. Once I caught her trying to hide in shrubbery, trying to follow me and keep me safe. I laughed and ran faster. I regret that now, because her love is beyond measure. I was too young. I didn't know that when you break free and run from love, you're going to be alone. I've been alone ever since. I wasn't afraid of being alone, and I never will. Why did I run? I guess I keep looking for perfection. I have an inner sense, an instinct, that says to me that what I'm looking for is just ahead. And so I'm always nearer by not keeping still. End poem.
Wow, what a fantastic write. This is just very profound. I'm going to let you comment on this first, Faziana. What did you think about this one?
I really enjoyed it. And what I like is the way that it questions, why did I run? Because sometimes you miss things. You could have spent more time with your mom. You could have had that connection. You could have enjoyed your childhood instead of rushing to grow up. And I think that's something lots of people do. They can't wait to be older and independent and on their own. And then when you're older and independent and on your own, you miss those times when you could have just savored being a child. And it's not just running down the street away from the mom. It's running into growing up too fast. I like the way that this unfolded. I would run and run, and I've been running. And that transition from the individual day of the child running down the sidewalk to the idea that the person is always running towards the future, always just trying to get to the next thing. It makes me think of like when you're like living for the weekend. Like, I just need to get through this week to get to the next thing, and not actually being in the moment at all, always trying to get to the next thing, and not savoring those moments. I just imagine the mom hiding in the shrubbery trying to keep the child safe without getting in the way, and it just, I don't know, it warms my heart that the mom cares, and yet it's sad because she wants so much to be connected, and it seems like that wasn't accepted, because it even says run from love. So not only, you know, run from being close to her, which, you know, kids get embarrassed of their parents sometimes and they want to have their space, but to not accept that connection when it could have been there. I think this is a very profound right.
Great comment, Aphasiana. Yeah, I really enjoyed this write. And have you had Blue Leader on any of your contests before? This is my first time, I believe, hearing one of their.
Some of my Part Sinner, Part Saint. We've had a few relatively new, but I've enjoyed all of them.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this one, and you know, what people, you know, they don't want you to run with scissors, obviously, because it's dangerous. But the thing is that what they haven't taken into account that this person has found safety and found and has found safety and has discovered faith in the running, right? This is where the person holds their, this is actually when they're safe, right? Is when they're running. And so if I'm running to the next thing or if I'm looking to that, that's having faith in running away and running further and doing it alone and having, you know, so as other, you know, I think that that's what the writers kind of, and I could be wrong, but it kind of the inner struggle is or whatever is society viewing it as a dangerous or like being alone as a bad thing and all of these things. But this person has molded themselves, or maybe it was in them beforehand, and that's their rebel, is that they find some type of hope or whatever, and, you know, what you view as dangerous, they find as necessary. And so I thought that this was a very profound write and very well done, and thank you for submitting it, Blue Leader. So, Viziano, why don't you take us to where we're heading to next?
Well, it's your turn to read, and we have one by Stephen T. Wellman.
Okay. This is Misunderstood by Stephen T. Wellman. I'm the thrown out paperback, a story no one wants to read, about the mystery never solved. I'm very complex, an algebraic problem where the X remains metaphorically unknown. The way I walk, the way I talk, the way I act, the way I react to different circumstances, nothing but a misunderstood misfit. I am the rebellious rocket man, burning my fuse out alone, where it took years for touchdown to bring me back down, back around. The running renegade who was played and replayed for a song never sung, a one-hit blunder, running through a house of mirrors, running from the monsters I see, not from the childhood monster, bashed and bruised me, running to stand still, running from the kill, the unwanted reflective reveal, the defining defector, the practical pretender, never understood. End poem. Another great write here, Stephen. Faziana, what did you think about this one?
I really enjoy this. Stephen's writes are so deep, and so often he brings us into the pain of his childhood. But here it's just the metaphor of being the thrown-out paperback is really strong, because he's not just a thrown-out book. He's a thrown-out paperback, and I can picture it as someone who works with books and often gets people returning them quite damaged. I'm picturing the paperback with, like, the broken spine. It has, like, the bent pages. It's maybe been to the beach or something where it has that kind of curled, wet feeling that's been cast aside and not taken good care of. And to feel like nobody wants to read that story anymore because he feels damaged is just so devastating that anyone would feel like nobody wants to hear their story. Because, I mean, well, first of all, everyone should feel like they have someone listening. But also, I have loved reading Stephen's story throughout his poems. So, Stephen, if you're listening, I guarantee you people want to read your story. We want to get to know you more. We want to hear more of you and your poems. The X remains a metaphorically unknown. I was always terrible at algebra, but I do like the mystery of that. When I heard Rocket Man, I immediately was in, like, Elton John mode for a second. I had to be like, no, this is not what we're talking about. But I'm hearing that song in my head. The House of Mirrors part really struck me. Running from the monsters I see, when he's talking about himself, he's seeing the parts of himself that he doesn't like. Not the childhood monster, not his father, I believe is the one he's talked about in his other poems, who hurt him, but him, his own self, maybe afraid of having his father in him, of being like him in any way, of being damaged on more than a physical level. Running to stand still, I really like that line. And the defining defector, practical pretender, it's some good use of alliteration. And then that sad feeling of never understood, and that comes back to the title, Misunderstood. And that can be such a lonely feeling when you feel like nobody gets you. I really enjoyed this.
Great comment, Feziana. Yeah, I enjoyed this quite a bit too. Just the metaphors and the way that he described it. I'm the thrown out paperback. What a way to kick off a poem. To the rebellious side, and this is another thing, the running rebel, running to stand still, running from the kill, never understood, and that naturally is going to make you rebellious. You know, that makes a natural rebel out of you when you don't feel the understanding from society or from people around you. And it almost creates that space, or it creates that gap, or and things just begin to kind of slightly worsen as far as what you feel anyway. So I thought that this was a fantastic write, and as usual, thank you for penning this one for us, Stephen. Where do you want to go next, Miss Feziana?
I'm going to read one by Daniel Deschino.
Okay.
This is called Urban Thoughts of the Appalachian Trail by Daniel Deschino. Spirit traversing off the trodden path, upward mountain way against the downward stream, as the caravan left behind parades onward, the loneliness of the renegade, the loneliness of the cavalcade, a scary choice when both are made. On mountaintop, picture far-reaching and surrounding, a vision of the caravan that was and will be. Eyes look farther still. Distance brings only other mountains, conquerors alone atop each peak, all different panorama. All different caravans. Where to from here? Nowhere but down. And the ride, the building rapid streams, to wait and rest in the valley below, at river's end, by lakeside beach and open flowered fields, and cross the path of caravan crusades to another lonely mountaintop in an endless snow-covered range. End poem.
Great read, Feziana, and great write, Daniel. Urban thoughts on the Appalachian Trail.
You know, for whatever reason, well, I mean, for probably historical reasons, but that area of the Appalachians is just kind of forever tied to a renegade or kind of rebel mentality, even if maybe it's like urbanized somewhat now, or maybe you're from an urban area, and once you maybe cruise the area, it you feel the energy or feel the ties to kind of the rebellion nature, all the way down to moonshining and kind of I believe the start of like NASCAR and everything is in, you know, in that region, from outrunning the cops. And I mean, there's just a ton of rebellion from the people, from the history of the people that are in that area. And so it was very fitting for him to tie that in to another lonely mountaintop in the endless snow-covered range. Beautiful ending. But, you know, like, you know, there's something that, you know, as he's tied up into the hill and then the mountains and being by yourself up in the mountains and feeling that freedom, you know, just think that there's a power and a feeling of just freedom up in that range. So very well done, Daniel, and thank you for submitting this. What did you think about that, Faziana?
I enjoyed it. I have to admit, I looked up Cavalcade because I could not for the life of me remember what it is, but it makes total sense now that I see it. A formal procession of people walking on horseback, or more modernly in vehicles, but the horseback makes sense because cavalcade, the cavalry was in the line like a parade, cavalcade. Okay, so thank you, Daniel, for teaching me a word. I always like to learn a new word, and cavalcade is my word of the day. We're learning, or I am anyway. I loved the line, conquerors alone atop each peak. So they have a connection because they're each experiencing the climb. They have a shared experience, a shared will, a shared goal and accomplishment, but they're all doing it separately. And the fact that they're alone enjoying these peaks and they can see each other in the distance maybe, eyes looking further still, but they're not actually a team. They're not together. So there is this kind of separateness that in a way makes them the renegade. They're like the lone wolf kind of thing. And yet they're atop each peak. There's always someone who's trying to be the top of everything and stepping away from the crowd, from that, now we think of it as like the kind of assembly line kind of thing. But at the time not in Daniel's time because he's not that old, but in the time of caravans, when the horses were all in a line, to be the person who broke that line and went off on your own and left the safety of it in order to explore, it's an interesting metaphor, and I think that he does a really good job at making you think about that independence. Plus, I'm kind of like around mountains, although I'm in the Rockies, not the Appalachians, and this just, it feels like home. the mountains and the valleys with the flowers. So well done, Daniel.
Yeah, great, right, Daniel? And that is kind of interesting. And what? So it's only 8:45 there?
It's 7:45 here.
7:45 there. Man, you got it.
Yeah, I'm on the other side of the Rockies.
Man, that seems so funny because it's like late night poets. No wonder why it's perfect for you to host these late night shows. I'm thinking, man, Faziana must never sleep. But it's like,
it's not late night for me. Even the after midnight ends before midnight.
That is
That's always
funny.
Confusing. Because, like, my show, Parts Center, Parts Ain't, it's technically, according to the website, Saturday, because for Eastern time, which is what we measure in late-night poets, it's after midnight, so it's considered Saturday. But for me, when the show is done, it's still Friday. So
yeah.
I have the hardest thinking of it as Saturday.
I know, and getting it all straight. So anyway, that's kind of funny. So, great comment some interesting facts. So, word of the day, cavalcade, or what a cavalcade.
Yeah.
Right?
Think
word
of it like cavalry.
Yep, the cavalry. Perfect. All right, it looks like you have Passion's Promise up next. Whose read was it again? Did I read that one, or did you?
I read it, so it's your turn.
All right. Okay, this is Passion's Promise. Poem's called A Rebel Turn of Events. It goes like this. I'm a rose, withered, battered from one side of the rainbow to the next. Broken petals, torn to the roots, stepped on, abused. Many years, most of my childhood to my adulthood, I've been beaten, raped, even lost a child, a rainbow baby in my hands. I've become a cold and bitter woman. I had wrestled with cancer. My worst, the beatings and loss. My heart burned at the stake. My mentality beaten by thousands, and physically, I'd rather had than the rest. Bruises heal, heart, soul, and mind do not. At late 30s, I was changed. I became a rebel, fighting back, drunk or sober. Words said to me got rebuttal. I finally stood up for me. From ground up, my roots kept me strong, grounded. Petals were beaten. They were given strength by God Almighty to withstand the storm. A heart once fragile now becomes a non-stomping ground. You will not get in unless I let you. My soul, my body is mine. I will fight before blood drips from me again. When the wind whispers, here comes the storm, I shout back, I am the storm. A no-nonsense rose, seeking the same, searching for love and happiness without the violence. End poem. Great right, and very powerful and heartfelt right. Just what we, you know, that really kind of it embodies what we really do here, is what our premise is here at the Double Helix. So thank you, Passion's Promise. So Faziana, could we start with you on comments?
Wow. This is definitely an emotional one. The part about the lost child absolutely kills me. I mean, the beaten and raped and all that too. But the child is what hits me in the heart the deepest. And a rainbow baby, too. A rainbow baby is what we call a baby that you have after a miscarriage. So, like, if you have a miscarriage, a child lost in the womb, and then you succeed in bringing a pregnancy to term after that, that baby is the miracle baby, the rainbow baby, that is the light after the storm. So to lose the rainbow baby, the one that was the comfort after losing the other, that's just a whole other level of tragic. And then the cancer, like, this is such a hard life. Devastating. Just reading about it, I feel broken. But I really like the plant metaphors. Broken petals torn to the roots. And then I love when the end gets that strength back, a non-stomping ground. I like that, that rejection of the stomping ground, where you will not stomp on her anymore. I really loved that, a non-stomping ground. And the way that it talks about how the physical pain is actually less of a big deal than the emotional pain, because the physical pain can heal easier, even if it's terrible at the time. So this is so deep and raw, and there's strength in this vulnerableness that I really respect.
Great comment. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That non-stomping ground line, I thought, was the highlight of it. But very painful and tragic, right? But a right that displayed a tremendous amount of strength throughout, and had a great metaphor that obviously holds very true to the person, as they have a rose in their profile picture. And so this was a very personal rite, and one that is kind of as this person kind of displayed as kind of a becoming, you know, the turn of events and the events that led to this have morphed and have kind of sculpted and molded this rebel out of this poet. And just a very emotional rite. You know, this poem just did a fantastic job of grabbing the reader's emotions and controlling them and keeping them throughout the entire piece. So very well done, and thank you for submitting that. I really enjoy it. It's tough to say I really enjoyed it, but I really enjoyed the intentions and everything behind it. Fantastic, right? Looks like you have another one up here by Laura.
Yes.
I think that you're up
high
on the right.
On the reading, yes. I'm not going to write it. I'm going to read it.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Hi. I'm not going to write on the spot. I'm not very good at improv. This is Hi, I'm a Neuro Renegade by Laura Race Poetry. We were hopelessly outnumbered. It was a lost cause all along. Renegade, Warren Zevon. Nice to meet you. You don't know me. You look at my face, my hair, and my ways. How odd do I stand in front of your eye? When I try to be more than the same as anyone else, oh, I'm sorry. You think I'm out of line, out of my mind? I'm a renegade copy. And that is just fine, darling. I collect mental disorders and happy pills as any fanboy who collects toys just for fun. So I embrace my narrow split. I am clinically sad. And when happy, I'm just mad. I have a list of things to be done, really, to keep my gear busy. Busy, pretty, and amused, with other thoughts creating time to drive myself into a fancy car fueled by obsession. My compulsion is to tell you on autopilot, hi, but please don't reply. Don't ask how my day was or how the weather is now. Ignore me. Make me unseen. I'm a renegade to all you small talk, all of your small talk. I'm too busy in just being me, really. End poem.
Great write and great read, Afasiana. Great write, Laura. Great read, Afasiana. And it looks like we have Naomi with us.
Oh, I see her now. I'm sorry, Naomi. You've been on hold for 3 minutes. My bad. Welcome.
Hello, hello. How are you guys?
Hello. Fantastic. Glad for you to join us here this evening. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to hear that poem? I think that the poems that are very Naomi all of a sudden were calling your name to comment on all of a sudden started coming up on our our radar. Did you get a chance to hear that one?
Yeah, I did. What a great write. I collect mental disorders and happy pills as any fanboy who collects toys just for fun. So I embrace my narrow split. That was quite a great line. She said, you know, this is full of, you know, of course, depression, sadness, pain. But in a way, she made it, I don't know, it just has her. Maybe it was Afasiana's voice reading, but because you're just so happy all the time and you have a tone. I don't know. It wasn't that, it didn't seem that all that sad. Like she put a little bit of, I don't know, the way, the twist of the words in here was like a little bit, she was laughing at it. Or, you know, she had a bit of humor to it, too.
Very witty.
Yeah, very witty and humorous, I found. You know, although the subject and, you know, very deep and well written throughout, I found that it was written, yeah, like you said, Dexter, witty and with a bit of a touch of humor there, you know, myself into a fancy car fueled by obsession. My compulsion is to tell you on autopilot high. You know, there's a bit of humor mixed in, I found, all the way through. So made it an excellent write. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it was done with a certain style that I thought really, really stood out. And like you said, it takes a very kind of sad and dark subject and topic. But she almost reveals how dark and sad it is to be considered quote unquote normal in this society. You know, my fancy car fueled by obsession, all of these things. I feel like she takes it of the almost the spot of going, yes, you know, I, you know, it is depression and things like this. These are the cards that I've been dealt, but you know, at least I'm not buying into all of your BS, or at least I'm not you, or, like, you know, at least I'm not just a sheep within society that believes all of these things, or that is so, you know, caught up on this small talk and all of this and then, you know, fake. And I might have a lot of mental disorders and things like that, but at least I'm a real person. So I thought that this was just a very, you know, as I said before, witty write and just very well done. Faziana, what did you think about it?
I loved it. I connected with this so much. I feel this way. You know, I'm terrible at small talk. I suffer with depression dramatically and have for years, but I do end up having that kind of like, I have to laugh at myself about it to survive. And I think she has that kind of playfulness to this. I love that line that Naomi pointed out right away, that, darling, I collect mental disorders and happy pills as any fanboy collects toys just for fun. That's me. I relate to this, and I love the way that she put it together, where she says something deep, but she is playful in her delivery. I really enjoyed it.
Same.
And Naomi, would you like to read yours next?
Oh, yeah, but I have to explain this because it's a kind of, you know, the way I'm a renegade in this. Well, I suffer from bipolar disorder. Well, I said it often, but it doesn't show now because I'm well medicated now. But, you know, when you're bipolar, I don't go into depression that much, but I have the highs, and I have these great big highs. I mean, you know, like I go 170 kilometers an hour when I'm in a high, down the highway, which is about 105 miles per hour, you know, and I collect tickets, I really am high. And, you know, I really go overboard. And one of the things that, you know, that when I go into a high is mint. Like I collect mint. Like I really go overboard. Yeah, that's one of my syndromes there of being high there, is that I really look for attention and whatever sexual satisfaction if you want to. And so this is this is the way so this is called of wine and mint. So I taste my mint as a savored wine. So much truth lies hidden within each flavor left lingering upon my palais. See, he's a Pinot Gris, refreshing and crisp, a delicate citrus mix with white floral notes, light, easy drinking, just perfect to enjoy on a hot summer's noon. Now him, a Muscadet, more bruised than oxidized, a Napoli character, but relatively bitter, still so green, could do with some more time to mature. Oh, an Albarino from Spain. He produced such a wonderful, full, aromatic experience. His bouquet rich and fruity, so I knew I could expect a refreshing, tasty adventure. And my Sauvignon Blanc, aggressively citrus-driven, grapefruit pith, exotic fruits, honeydew, kiwi, grassy mint with savory green pepper hints just left my lips salivating in anticipation of another sip. But most of all, I'll toast to my full-bodied Cabernet Sauvignon, bold tannins, long persistent finish, black cherry, black currant spices, intense smokiness of cedar and oak, silky smoothness leaves the mouth watering, begging for more arousal, just the one to swirl and savor in front of a blazing fireplace on cold evenings and keep you all warm and cozy through those long wintry nights. End poem.
Wow, what a piece here, Naomi. This is fantastic. I got to calm myself here. I'm going to ask Faziana to start off with comments on this one. Faziana.
Oh, that last stanza is so sexy. Oh, my gosh. The way you describe everything, the long, persistent finish, the just one to swirl and savor in front of a blazing fireplace. Oh, I'm speechless. I'm fanning myself. Naomi. Wow. That last stanza especially was just really hot. But the whole thing, the idea of comparing the different men to the different types of wine, and, you know, they're all delicious, and you get something out of any of them. All of the different wines give you a rush. But there's different styles and different ways to enjoy them. I think this is a fantastic metaphor, and it's just full of amazing descriptions that work so well on multiple levels. The way that you describe the wine is a very good description of the man and the appeal. This is fantastic, very creative, and I love this. I was totally lost in it. Well done.
Thank you.
Hi, Commodore Faziana. Yeah, this is kind of like, you know, going to a wine tasting, quote unquote, and then all of a sudden you end up hammered, you know, or I guess that was not the best word for it, but like.
Exactly.
That was the perfect word for it, actually.
But it's like, you know, you're doing, you know, you're like, oh, this is a sip of this one and a sip of this one and a sip and a sip and a sip. And before you know it, you're staggering out, you know, and you're describing and everything is getting elegant or everything is elegant. But as you go, it's getting more in depth and a little bit more drunk on the whole thing. This is definitely a rebel or renegade, right? Because it is very different from what we have in here. So I kind of like going almost opposite on it. So and as a rebellious or a rebel renegade nature to it. So Naomi, this was a fantastic write and a good curveball for the evening. So thank you.
Okay. Yeah, and I can stick around, so I'll be here. So I'll comment on other rights. Yeah, keep you company.
Hey, thank you.
Yay!
Well,
always good.
What's funny about this is that this was the right that kind of the show was started on. And so I decided to bust it out here tonight. I've never read it on air, but this was kind of the premise of the Double Helix very prematurely kind of started on this poem. So a poet is not born. Heart made of tempered steel, the force of a gray wolf raiding a nest, a scowl like a vulture swooping in to finish the rest. Ornery as a ram on a steep hill, the will of an ant hoisting a crumb. Been through more shit than a plumber, vacationed in hell for the summer. Luckier than your first time at the casino, and a sliver more fortunate than the bug you hit on the way there. I didn't choose to be a poet. End poem. Mm.
Oh, Dax, I enjoy this so much. And yes, that first line, I'm like, wait a minute, this isn't the introduction of our show. So I see what you did there. I like the scowl, like the vulture swooping in. The ant hoisting a crumb, and I like to use the word hoisting, because a crumb for us is so small, but for them it's bigger than them. Like that's like a big like oh, hoist is the perfect word for it. I'm doing actions that you can't see. I just realized I'm like imitating the ant, and you don't get that visual, which is probably for the best. the first time at the casino was good, but then I love the line that follows that, and the sliver more fortunate than the bug you hit on the way there, just a sliver more fortunate, you know. You're the luck at the casino is clearly not that great if you're only a tiny bit more fortunate than the buck who got smushed. Like, I think you lost some money there. I didn't choose to be a poet. And, you know, I think you're right. A poet is not a choice. I think it's just in us. Maybe you choose whether you actually write everything down, and whether you express yourself and, like, you know, follow through with being a poet. But I think you just are one. You're melded into that. And I can see you being a reluctant poet who's really good at it. But you're the ornery as a ram on a steep hill. I think that's a good Dexter thing, except you're too fun to be totally ornery. But I could see that little grumpy face if you're tired or something. Yes, I'm picturing your face on a ram now. It's very interesting visual.
You should see this mustache I got going now, though.
Oh yeah! Oh, you gotta send us a picture.
I'm going for the. It kind of is kind of the ram horns. I'm just growing the curled up mustaches at the end right now. So I'm in the process. Once I'm done, I'll show you.
All right, I want a picture. You can't tease us like this and not show us. Naomi, what did you think?
Well, I think this sums up, you know, a lot of. You know, I love how you finished out, I didn't choose to be a poet. You know, there's a big message in that, you know. I don't think we ever choose it, a lot of us. Yeah, and you know, the sentence, the line that stuck out for me, been through more shit than a plumber, which is kind of funny because, you know, a plumber, yeah, they must go through a lot of shit indeed. And but it vacationed in hell for the summer. You know, I don't know exactly what happened there, but, you know, that's a deep line there, even though, and it's witty too, and it's funny too, but, you know, it has this deep. And all the other lines, of course, that Afasiana already mentioned, you know, it's just a great, great, great write, you know. The way it starts out, to heart made of tempered steel, the force of a gray wolf raiding a nest, a scowl like a vulture swooping in to finish the rest. You know, that's really strong, you know, lines there. And, yeah, I just enjoyed this all the way through, you know. It really, you know, it's really states the heart, you know, of poetry writing. And, you know, and just an excellent write all through, Dex.
Thank you, Naomi. Yeah, this was a... I wrote this poem before the show came out, and it kind of, it's funny that it kind of turned into the beginning of the show and kind of the outline of it, I guess you could say, or whatever. But thank you for the comments, and here we go. The next one we have here is called The Final Outlaw by S.M. Pierce, and Afasiana, could you read that one?
The Final Outlaw by S.M. Pierce. I'm going way down south, right by the border, gonna start some shit, like a new world order. I ain't got a heart to break or a soul to take, just big brass balls and a head full of hate. The world's final outlaw, gunslinger, goldfinger, deathbringer, dead ringer, with a mouthful of tobacco and my hand on a pistol, down in the canyon where the wind won't whistle. I got a bloody bandana, but I know it ain't mine. God gave it to me to remind me of my crimes. One lone outlaw in a race against time. End poem.
You want to quarterback this one, Afasiana?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I because I was the reader, I lost track of life.
I
got caught up in the thing. Naomi, why don't you start our comments?
Yeah, well, she really summed up, like, kind of a Western movie here. I can just see Clint Eastwood here, going down. Whether she personifies herself as, as this outlaw, this kind of old Western outlaw. I got a bloody bandana, but I know it ain't mine. God gave it to me to remind me of my crimes. One lone outlaw in a race against time. Yeah, she has wonderful flow and rhyme in this, and so many great lines. I mean, that second stanza is just wonderful, as is the first two and the one I mentioned. But she just took the renegade and she just flew with it here. Just an amazing piece.
No, I completely agree about the flow. I felt like maybe I should be like singing it. Like it should, even though rap is not usually associated with the Wild West, it has like the kind of rhythm to it that I'm like, oh, Dex should have done this because he could sing it. It had this hard hitting kind of like bam rhythm to it. I really enjoyed it. I like the part that you pointed out too. I got a bloody bandana, but I know it ain't mine. I think that was my favorite part. I loved it. I also like the down in the canyon where the wind won't whistle. The wind won't whistle. The alliteration has got me, where the wind won't whistle.
Mm-hmm.
But also just like something about what that's saying. It's like you're isolated where even the wind doesn't get you. This is really fun. I'm glad I got to read it, even if I don't know if I got the rhythm as well as Dex could have. Dex, what did you think?
Yeah, I think down in the canyon where the wind won't whistle is kind of, up at the brim, I would assume, like kind of almost in a bottle, up at the brim of the mountain, almost like when you're blowing in a bottle, maybe the wind whistles up there, but you're down so deep in the canyon, it won't whistle. I could be wrong, but I thought that this was a great write, and there's a reason why, the outlaws and the Western, I think that one could argue, whether it be, TV show or movie or whatever it is, that Westerns have probably been the most popular and successful genre in history of any of genres, and I think that the reason behind that is because people kind of can think of themselves in that way, or can, when you're talking about a rebel, I think that she's kind of using some of these things kind of as a metaphor about the crimes I did. The crimes could be a lot of different things, which could from anything from drugs or whatever, it could be more of a modern thing, but kind of thinking of yourself as an outlaw. I've seen that the poet is from Texas, and so it definitely has that Texas feel and that Texas attitude in the write itself. So I thought that he captured that very well, and in this modern time, to say the final outlaw, I think that it's definitely kind of viewing the generational thing to be kind of the a generational thing as far as people being now more of a collective rather than being alone. I think that people try to fit in nowadays, and so there's a lot of truth to this. And it's used the outlaw as a metaphor. So great, right?
when you're talking about Westerns as a genre, it made me think about, so we have little stickers on the spines of our books, and if it's a Western, it has a little cowboy hat on it. So I was trying to, like, get the kids to think about, like, what that means. And so I'm like, hey, there's a cowboy hat on this. What do you think it means? What genre of book would it be? And this one kid goes, romance. And I'm like, well, no, the romance has the heart. And he was like, my mom likes cowboys.
That is a pretty good one. To save a horse, ride a cowboy or something. That must be your song. So,
yeah.
Like me.
There you go. Naomi likes that style. I believe that this is Pam 8. And I think that this is her new name on here.
Oh, I didn't know
that. I'm 99% sure.
Oh.
But this is Pam 8. And Naomi, if you could give this a read for us.
Okay. It wasn't just my past, it was my path. I choose my experience when hard and tough. Needing to live it out, dare me, I beg you, I'll call your bluff. Buy me a drink, I'll buy you one back, keeping the favors in balance and my loins from attack. On my own as a tween, barely shy of 14, stepped into the world, saw things I had yet to see. Forced to step up my game, learning what this big, great big world had in store for the likes of me. Dodging pimps and abusers, I used my wits to survive. The monsters may try to take me, but they won't take me alive. I plan right under their nose, hiding all in plain sight. Until the day I bid farewell and don't return home that night. Kill my baby, leaving me for dead, unable to have another when I have so much love to give. If I cannot join the ranks of motherhood, I shall radiate love towards one and all, lending a hand to all beings and fellow man. We're forced to crawl. I see myself as a lone warrior working on my craft, rebuilding a destroyed soul into one that's built to last. For it wasn't just my path. It was my path. End poem.
Great read, Naomi. And yes, I am sure that this is Pam 8, but I want to make sure and address her by the name that she now is submitting as Namdeg Somo, and I hope that I'm not butchering that. But this definitely, you know, if you didn't even look at the bottom description, you could just definitely feel the pain and the emotion that she is kind of her signature of writing, and the transparency in which she tells her story is, you can just it's such a turbulent story, and it's such a turbulent poem. That for some reason, or it's like there's, it almost feels like it's done as a therapeutic. And so there's, even though it's such a turbulent poem, it feels like there's some comfort to be had within the write because of her fantastic job of storytelling. I just feel like she presents it in such a way that's therapeutic, that that it is
is very digestible. It's digested a certain way by the reader, and that's a very skillful way thing to do, because it is such dark subject matter that it's very difficult to digest, and so her, I think that it's definitely a skill for a writer to be able to to kind of feed spoonfuls of it slowly to the audience. But I just thought that this is just a brilliant write, and one that shows tremendous amount of strength. Naomi, what did you think about it?
Yeah, well, the lines that stood out for me was, I haven't written about my tween, like my teenager years yet. I've had a hard time, teenage years, I guess. I wasn't diagnosed yet, and I was pregnant by the age of 14, and then again at the age of 16. And, the first time I was pregnant at the age of 14, I literally killed my baby by just ignoring that I was pregnant. I was from a very conservative Christian home, and I knew my parents would never accept it, and I'd be, just rejected for it. So I wore a tight clothes, and I jumped fences, and I did everything, but I was able to conceive after that. I had four kids, but that part of it really touched me there, kill my baby, leaving me for dead. Because I gave birth to a dead baby, and it almost killed me. They found out I was pregnant at around 7 months, but the baby was dead inside me since it was 5 months. And it was like rotting inside of me, slowly killing me. But I gave birth to it naturally, but to a dead baby. But so that those lines were stood out to me: kill my baby, leaving me for dead, unable to have another when I have so much love to give. And I know Pam is known for reaching out, helping others, and just being a wonderful human being. And I think her character shows through in this right here. And and bravo to her for writing about these teenage years, because I maybe one day I'll get there where all the hardness I had in life, but I'm not there yet, and maybe one day I'll get there. But bravo to her for this write, just exceptional.
Great comment, Naomi. And thank you for sharing a bit about yourself as well. Faziana, what did you think about this?
Oh, I have a hard time commenting just because there's so much emotion that this brings up. She had such a hard life, and the idea of having to, ward off those predators when she was so young, and to lose her baby, and Naomi, I was very sorry to hear about yours as well. This is just devastating. So I have a hard time sometimes focusing on the technical stuff of the poem when I'm just so struck emotionally that mm-hmm. I have a hard time commenting. But I think that she's so brave and strong to write about such vulnerable things, and I really like how she talks about how even though she can't give her love to a child, she helps all beings, all people, and tries to help those who have to crawl, because she was that person. I think that that's a beautiful attitude to have towards it. It's easy to be filled with hate when you've had such a life, but instead she is spreading love, and I have so much respect for that.
Okay. Next we have this one by Diane D, and I'll give that a read for us, and it's called "That's What You Look Like Today." I called again, God. I called you on my last dime. For what a dime is worth in 2022. I took a chance, a leap of faith, that you would someday answer. Is today that day, big guy? You know, most everyone calls you in their own tongue, by their own name, in their own truth. Our truth is all we have that's ours. Those that live by their truth will often die by their truth. Today, you know, today people are dying by their truth in arsenals. What disease hasn't ravished mankind, society will, humanity is. When did you pass to mankind the right to decide if unborn hundreds get to be born? My choice is like my truth, big guy. I fought harsh for my choice. As hard and or harder than those who fought to make my choice their own. Mothers making painful choices, which child should take that last seat? Our rights are like our choices, and our choices are like our truths. The right to believe, trust, pray, wait. Millions have no rights right now, God. Rights they fall asleep with will die below, singed fire red skies. I need to see you now, big guy, you know, how you might show yourself to me as a homeless man digging the trash for bottles, cries real tears when I hand him two huge garbage bags full. I look up. That's what you look like today? I don't mean to be demanding, God, but I need to see what you look like today. And I don't think I'm alone in that. Cities of countries, of continents, are waiting to see what you look like today. Is today that day, big guy? End poem.
Great read, Dexter, and fantastic write, Diane G. I really liked the part that said, rights they fall asleep with will die below singed fire-red skies, because, you know, things are frightening. They can change, you know. We see war in the world right now where, mm-hmm. you know, you might have a certain lifestyle that you are confident with and you're going to bed and then you wake up and it's like a whole new world with so many different dangers and, and you might be under a new rule. I really liked that part. And I like the idea of God presenting as a homeless man digging in the trash. I always thought that was like a good kind of test of people. I seem to remember in Sunday school, like a million years ago when I was young, the chaplain person would talk about how we would find God in mysterious places, and it would be like, how do you treat the people who need you, who can't help you, is how you're judged as a person. And to see, for him to show up as a homeless man and see how you respond to that man, if you give compassion, if you if you're kind, if you ignore them, if you're mean, to me that made sense. I'm not religious anymore, but at the time, that's how I would picture it. That was like the test. dressed, and that would be what he would look like today. In my mind, as a child, I expected that. And I think that's subconsciously in the back of my mind, possibly still. I like to think that I just care about people for the people, but I wonder if I still have that little bit of, like, this could be this could be more than not that there needs to be more than just a man who's homeless, but I digress. I thought that that was a really good example. And then there's that call for some kind of sign that things are going to be okay, that there's someone watching over her, that there's maybe a purpose to all of this pain, that call for connection and for a response to feel like you're not alone. I felt a lot of longing in this, a disconnect from faith and yet a clinging to it at the same time. Dexter, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought that this was a remarkable rite, and I think that the rebel or the renegade tied to it is kind of questioning God, you know, or kind of putting him on the spot. This is your time to show, you know, what are you going to look like, you know. I remember this was a few years ago, and everybody gave this guy a hard time, but it was a wide receiver, and I can't remember what team he was on for football. But it was such an interesting interview, but he was upset with God for allowing him to drop the game-winning pass, and it was kind of interesting because it's like, you know, it's like take accountability and stuff, but so many people praise God when they win. You know, kind of the rebellious side is, what the hell, God? why'd you let me drop that one? And so it's kind of like on this one, it's like, God, this is, you know, and this person is kind of turning the table a little bit, I think, on God, saying that this is your time to show. But this stanza, you know, most everyone calls you in their own tongue, by their own name, their own truth. Our own truth is all that we have that's ours. Those that live by their truth, we often die by their truth. We'll often die by their truth. That's such a strong stanza, and there's so much insight and there's so much wisdom within that. And so I just really enjoyed this piece as a whole, and I thought it was just fantastic.
I love what you said about that football player. Like, I don't really follow sports, so I didn't know that. But it makes sense to me that if you would thank him for the win, that you believe that he chose to give the win to someone else. So, like, you know, if you think
right.
that he gets involved, then it makes sense
right.
to have some resentment.
Damn, it's kind of your rebellious side for saying, what the hell, you know?
Yeah. Naomi, what did you think of the poem?
Yeah, well, I liked the stanza that I was drawn to that stanza too that Dex pointed out there about everyone calling in their own tongue, you know, their own name, their own truth, you know, like a respect for religion there, different religions and different, you know, beliefs. But also that, you know, also that religion is the one of the main factors that brings war to the world. So in that way, you know, they die by their truth too, you know, because there's so many wars because of religion. You know, the way she finishes it, waiting to see what you look like today, is today that? Day, big guy, the way she says big guy, you know, like, come down here, big guy, let's meet you, you know, what are you waiting for, You know, are you gonna finally show up, you know, big guy? I just love that the tone there that she took there. It's like she's confronting him, you know, confronting God, you know, to show his face finally, you know. And yeah, I just love the it all the way through. Like, you know, the part that you cited to Ephesiana with the garbage bags, the homeless man, you know, is that what you look like today? Is that the face of God today in that homeless man? You know, this is, Diane just has a way of writing in different styles. And, you know, this is just so powerful, so deep. And layered, right? And, you know, it has such a profound message inside of it, you know, that you can just dig into any of these stanzas and you know, just find new interpretations there. So just a wonderful, rich and deep write here, Diane. It's just an amazing, amazing job here.
Great, great comment, Naomi. I just wanted to say that shout out to Robbie and Wichita Rick for being in the comment section. Wichita Rick had a great comment. Think if summed up in a single word, hope is the best shown here. Never know what higher power can reflect back to each of us. So great comment there, and thank you for you guys for listening and being on the chat board. But Ephesiana, we're going right into your we'll have time for a couple of the pieces from your contest, so why don't you share a little bit about the contest of these next couple of rites, because we're just finishing up that was the last rite that we had for the Renegade.
Okay, so my contest is some quotes from Tyrion Lannister, who is a character in Game of Thrones or A Song of Ice and Fire, depending on if you're looking at the books or the TV show. Tyrion is my favorite character in that series, so I picked two quotes from him, and I'll read the first quote because the first two poems will be from that. It's, "Never forget what you are. The rest of the world will not. Wear it like armor, and it can never be used to hurt you." Tyrion Lannister, which is written by the author, J.R.R. No. I almost said
you're going to Lord
Tolkien,
of the Rings.
It's going with Lord of the Rings. Martin. George R.R. Martin. Now I've lost my mind. George R.R. Martin. Okay, sorry about that. This poem is by Incubus 2, and it's called Extroverted Introvert. You see pride and self-assurance, all implied a woven shield. Others find gallant and arrogance, merely a sword I have to wield. People claim I'm over-playful, so easily I speak my mind. Just a smokescreen there to lull, leaving their watching eyes blind. They don't see me. No one ever does. I am the enigma. I am an oxymoron. There is no we, no two, nor us. So stop analyzing me. Just move on. End poem. I like this, the extroverted introvert, and to it fits the quote because it's acknowledging something about themselves and choosing to embrace it, and I actually relate to this quite a bit as someone who can sometimes seem like an extrovert because I'm very giggly, and I put myself in situations like this where I'm hosting a show and have to talk in front of people. And, like, I sing to small children, but really I'm an introvert. I am content to be alone, just reading under the covers or off in my own little space. I don't really do well with crowds. So I connect with this. I think Incubus 2, I get you. And people can kind of see you as full of pride when actually you are full of insecurities. And I like the way that you said just a smoke screen there to lull, leaving their watching eyes blind, where you probably have that sense of humor and sarcasm and that that wall up when the real you is cowering behind it. I like the word choices, enigma, oxymoron. I really liked that. And the way oxymoron rhymes with move on, so it's not just the on, but like the it's multi-syllabic rhyming where that keeps the rhythm going there. Well done. Naomi, what did you think?
Yeah, I just I like this. You know, a lot of people, like I'm one of those too. Like I had a really tough life, but you know, I don't dwell on that, and I just erase it by humor. I'm always giggly. I'm always playful. I'm always joking around, you know. And I think, you know, like you, you said, Ephesiana, this joins me too, you know, and just the last line there. So stop analyzing me and just move on. You know, sometimes we don't want to be seen as you know, like, well, for me, I don't want to be seen as a victim. Yeah, I don't want to be seen as a victim in life. I just want to be seen as a warrior, you know, as one that got through it. And you know, yes, I'm going to keep my joyful part, and you know, not be down or depressed by what I went through, but just stronger. And in a way, you know, he uses that shield too, you know, just the shield of being like sort of like a clown there that's out there, but you know, just putting up that smoke screen, like he says, there to lull, leaving their watchful eyes blind. I think that's such a great a line there, just a smoke screen there to lull, leaving their watching eyes blind. And I also love that last stanza there. I am the enigma, I am an oxymoron. There is no we, no to, nor us. So stop analyzing me and just move on. Yeah, I think this is an amazing, you know, we see his character really shine through in this few short three stanzas there. I think we really see his character here. And, yeah, so this is amazingly well-written. It says so much in so few words here. So just an amazing writing here.
Great comment, Naomi. And Dexter, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, kind of as Naomi touched on at the end there, too, you know, such a great, such a, you know, very thought-provoking in such a brevity. But you know, kind of almost tying to the previous right, you know, and regardless of what people's beliefs are, but there's that saying about, you know, only God can judge me. I think that ties in well here, because it's like, you know, it's not your job, you know, obviously the person is very almost overly analytical of themselves, as you know, a lot of poets kind of happen to be, and you know, it's like but it's pretty widespread. A lot of people are very judgmental of themselves. It's not your job to judge me and to categorize me and to offer or to try and pinpoint why I'm acting this way or what I'm doing. This is the way that I choose to be, or this is the way I'm living. And so it's summed up very well in just three short stanzas. So I thought that this was a very intelligent write and very kind of like, you know, that the way that it ends is perfect, because it's just like, this isn't up for discussion, you know. So great write.
And what should we read next, Dexter?
Okay, we have another one for that same quote, and it is by Stephen T. Wellman, and it's called Living Proof. And I will post that now, and I will give that one a read. This is called Living Proof. Let your truth speak. Tangerine twilight tickles tired eyes. Silent silhouettes stand stoically. Wicked winter's winds whisper in my ear. Bitter cold wraps around my neck. All my ghosts think they own me. A checkered past thinks it can haunt me. Dreams in dark corners no longer taunt me. I've wrestled with the dark. I hid the marks as well. I hid the marks well. I wore the mask well. And when asked if I was okay, I'd always smile and be on my way. I'm no longer a smoking chimney. No more blowing smoke screens. My 2.5 packs a day app is gone. I no longer drink to take the edge. I lived on the edge. The blade cuts deep. We slowly bleed the secrets we keep. Darkness and emptiness is never your friend. Yet we bathe in it and pretend we are okay. It's okay to not be okay. It's okay to be lost at times. A tinfoil facade only shines for a moment. I wasn't created to shine for a moment. Neither were you. We can't burn a candle at both ends. It only shortens your lifespan. You were created to shine. Never hang your head in shame. Never let them douse your flame. I've received bruises from short fuses. They don't define me. They don't remind me pain is a treasure. Unconditional love fills in all your empty spaces as it embraces all of you. You're incredibly crafted art and shine you are incredibly crafted art and shine your truths. A lighthouse in the dead of night, reminding others hope always finds a way, and it does. Believe me, it's the truth. I'm living proof. End poem.
Excellent read, and I really loved this poem by Stephen. This is fantastic. My favorite part is, we slowly bleed the secrets we keep. Darkness and emptiness is never your friend, yet we bathe in it and pretend we are okay. I just think that is an absolutely beautiful way of saying that we bathe in it. And we do slowly bleed the secrets we keep. I think this is just absolutely beautiful in the way that it describes such dark and painful feelings, and yet makes it beautiful. I liked the line, it's okay not to be okay. That's actually the name of an organization that supports, like, suicide hotlines and families who've lost someone to suicide. I can't remember exactly where they're based or anything, but for some reason I follow them on Facebook. I don't know when that happened, but every once in a while I see they're advertising some kind of campaign they're doing, and it's okay not to be okay is something that I think, recognizing that people are allowed to feel badly and not force everyone to smile at all times, allows people to talk, to open up, and to get help. So I really like that message. It's okay not to be okay, because, you know, in every moment we're not We're not always going to be okay, and to deal with it is how we're going to get past it. I really liked a tinfoil facade only shines for a moment. That's beautifully worded. This is very creative and intelligent in the way that it's crafted, and I think it has some really great substance to it. I love this very much, Stephen. Dexter, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought this was fantastic. Really breathtaking in its wording. And, you know, I no longer drink to take off the edge. I lived on the edge. The blade cuts deep. It's just incredible writing and very well skilled at weaving one thought to the next. You know, I thought that really helps shape the meaning behind it, you know, because it's very easy to kind of go off on a tangent here. I thought he did a good job at structuring it to take us on this ride and all the while, you know, giving us lines that could be almost standalone, you know, haikus or something. I just thought that this was a very, very deep and skillful write, and very well done.
I agree. And Naomi, how did you feel about it?
Oh, yeah, this is amazing. It's very, very poetic. You know, in the lines and in the wording, it just has this flow about it. You know, from the way it starts out, tangerine twilight tinkles, tired eyes, silent silhouette stands stoically, wicked winter's winds whisper in my ear, bitter cold wrapped around my neck. You know, just the way it starts out, it just seizes you, you know, and carries you. You know, you're just brought into the poem, and it captures you completely. And there's such dark, you know, sadness throughout this poem, I find, a deepness here. You know, a real confession, you know, that comes out. And, you know, and there's hope in the end, a lighthouse in the dead of night, reminding others hope always finds a way. And it does, believe me, it's the truth. I'm living proof. You know, the way he finishes it off, too, is very profound. Yeah, just an excellent, excellent write all through here. You know, amazing wording and lines woven through this piece. Just great.
I completely agree. Such a beautiful poem. And we are out of time. Thank you so much, Naomi, for calling in. Thank you, Dexter, for being an awesome host with me. Thank you, Fill My Eyes, for giving us this show. Thank you to everyone who wrote for Dexter's contest and for mine. We loved your writing, and I always would like to hear more from you. I always have some contests open. The one with the Tyrion Lannister quotes is still open, and we'll do more of them on the next episode. Yes, that would be awesome.
Mm-hmm. Check out mine, too. I have one up on Ukrainian artists on for Twisted Tuesdays. So if you want to write, see some amazing Ukrainian artists there, I have their art up. You know, I have 10 artists from Ukraine. So, yeah, great art.
That's wonderful.
Week.
I will check that out. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, and thank you so much.
Good night.